Welcome back. This is Sight to the Blind. Interesting question I got in the comment section of the last episode. A brother asked if I believed or not that we are in the new covenant as written in Jeremiah 31:31-34. And I'm going to read it to you. Behold, the days come, says Yahuwah, that I will cut a renewed covenant with the house of Yasharel and with the house of Yehuda, not according to the covenant that I cut with their fathers in the day that I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Mizraim, which my covenant they broke, although I was a husband unto them, says Yahuwah. But this shall be the covenant that I will cut with the house of Yasharel after those days, says Yahuwah. I will put my Torah in their inward parts and write it in their hearts, and will be their Elohim, and they shall be my people. And they shall teach no more every man his neighbor and every man his brother, saying, Know Yahuwah, for they all shall know me. From the least of them unto the greatest of them, says Yahuwah, for I will forgive their iniquity and I will remember their sin no more. I don't believe that we are in the new covenant yet. We are still in the land of our captivity. We are still being woken up. I think this is a lot of misconception when it comes to this, or people really forget when they come into this awakening that as soon as they wake up, that now everything is supposed to turn over because they woke up. And you not knowing that the Most High is still freeing minds and freeing ruachs and calling others to the called out assembly who have not even woken up yet. I don't think the Most High has shut the door completely closed on the seeds that he's planted in this generation. So no, I don't think we are in the new covenant yet. The same new covenant as mentioned by Paul. I mean, we still are teaching. That's the whole point. If we were in a new covenant, then it wouldn't be no need for Truth Unedited. It wouldn't be no need for brothers and sisters that are teaching the truth online. It wouldn't be no need for it because everybody would know Yahuwah. And people are still attached to social issues. People are still attached to religion. People are still attached to breaking down the symbolism of this world. And not many people have come out and said, oh, I know Yahuwah. So until that time that we are taken out of our land, or when this land is being judged, I think that's when we will truly know Yahuwah. And when he takes us and put us in our own land, then it'd be no point for us to teach because we're already saved. We're already redeemed. He will present himself to us, just like it says in scripture that he's going to bring the other nations down to Jehoshaphat and plead for his people, that we be released. Just like the second Exodus says, it would be just like the first Exodus. And yes, I do partake in ascending smoke offerings, because ascending smoke offerings is all through the feast days. Like, what are you guys doing? Are you not doing the ordinances and statutes? Because it still says in this new covenant, he's going to put the Torah in our inward parts, which means we are going to understand new moons. We're going to understand new moon Shabbats. We're going to understand Shabbats. Now, he may remove those, but until that time, I'm going to stick to the ancient paths. It has benefited me to serve, because it's not just doing these ordinances and statutes as some grievous law demands of us. It's the way we show love from the Most High Yahuwah. That we are not like our forefathers and ancestors. That we are stepping up and learning from their mistakes and righting our wrongs and righting their wrongs. That's what it's about. I don't know why people are so confused when we get to the ascending smoke offering thing, as if it's not mentioned in the book of Leviticus. I mean, even Numbers 28:9 says we have to offer two lambs every Shabbat. The Most High does not change. I don't see him removing these ordinances and statutes when it comes to offering, because that's how we show that we love him. That's how we show that we are obedient. I mean, Leviticus 23:27, Yom Kippur, you have to make an offering by fire. That's an ascending smoke offering. Sukkot, you have to offer by fire. Pesach, you have to offer by fire. These ordinances and statutes don't change. Regardless of what covenant we are in, they don't change. It's really for you, just like wearing fringes and wearing the tassels, it's for you to remember that we are Yasharel. It is for you to remember before you even do something dumb as partake in vice, sin, unrighteousness, and wickedness, or iniquity. That's what it's for. You think twice because you know, like I said, when you get to the end of the week, you start thinking like, okay, I have to offer. Are my hands clean to offer from the Most High? Is my ruach clean? Is my mindset clean? Will he accept my offering? But also brings up a really good question that another brother or sister asked, named Rothschild. He said, one question about the calendar is the year of the Jubilee, something that we should continue to follow? If so, how will we calculate that within the calendar? It's impossible. We don't know. It said that in Jubilees that we will not find the path of years. We don't know when the moon became out of season. We can only now feel and understand that time is being sped up, but there's no way to truly calculate when the year is. We just don't know. I mean, you would have to go literally, you have to go back thousands of years to find out when they actually started the calendar. It wouldn't be something you just pick up. So I would like to know what the year of the Jubilee is, and that's only something that can be revealed to us through Yahuwah's Ruach and through his Ruach only. It's not something we can just study and go. I mean, the time is so far back. It'd be impossible to. Truly, it'd be impossible to. I'm using what has been given to me from Scripture, and that's what I'm following. When the Most High awakens more of his Ruach in us, then we know when to proceed through something else. But for right now, I don't even think we're going to make it to a Jubilee. We don't even know when that is. We don't. Right now, we're just trying to endure and survive to the time that this beast system goes under and the time that Yahushua HaMashiach comes back with the 144,000 to judge every nation. That's what we should be preparing for. Preparing for a wedding. One more thing. Do you believe that all the ascending smoke offerings that King Solomon offered had anything to do with Yahuwah coming to him in his dream that he granted him wisdom? 1 Kings 3, 9 through 13. Give therefore your servant an understanding heart to judge your people, that I may discern between good and bad. For who is able to judge us? Judge this. You're such great a people. And the speech pleased Yahuwah that Shalomah had asked this thing. Now, before that, Shalomah went to Gibeon and offered a lot of meat upon the altar. And it says that he loved Yahuwah, just like his father did. And this is where the generational blessings, we talk about generational curses, but this is where generational blessings come into play. Because Shalomah is the seed of David, and David is a man after Yah's own heart, all he had to do was follow and love Yahuwah just as his father David did. Now, was David perfect? No. Was Shalomah perfect? No. But the heart was there. That's something that's passed down. David's heart and love for the Most High Yahuwah passed down to Shalomah. And somewhat it stopped when Shalomah started to transgress. Then that disobedience pulled onto his son. So it went from a generational blessing of the heart, loving Yahuwah, into Shalomah. And then soon as Shalomah transgressed, that wickedness, that unrighteousness poured into his son. They got the kingdom ripped from him. So the Most High asked, what do you want? Because obviously he saw that he loved the Most High Yahuwah and was following the law, statutes, and commandments as his father David did. So the Most High was willing to give Solomon anything he asked for through that love, not through the offering of meat, not through the ascending smoke offerings, but that he showed that he had a zeal or a heart to love the Most High Yahuwah. And I continue. And Elohim said unto him, because you have asked this thing and have not asked for yourself long life, neither have asked riches for yourself, nor have asked the life of your enemies, but have asked for yourself understanding to discern judgment. Behold, I have done according to your words. Lo, I have given you a wise and understanding heart, so that there was none like you before you, neither after you shall any arise like unto you. And I have also given you that which you have not asked, both riches and honor, so that there shall not be any among the kings like unto you all your days. I you might as well say, period. I mean, there's no one that's been wiser than King Shlomo. But this is what the Most High loves. The fact that we don't ask him for riches, ask him for the life of our enemies, ask, you know, him to judge certain things, but to learn understanding, and that understanding heart and that wisdom is to search him. That's how you are connected to the Most High Yahuwah, through the understanding and the wisdom that you ask for by obeying his commandments, by showing that you have a heart to love the Most High Yahuwah with all your heart, with all your mind, and with all your soul. The same thing his son said was the first and greatest commandment. Shlomo knew of that commandment, and David knew of that commandment before it was even written. They knew of it. Matter of fact, let me check myself. No, it was written in Deuteronomy. It was written in Deuteronomy, love the Most High Yahuwah with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your soul. They took that to heart. So they were blessed because of it. And because they had the responsibility of a king, they had to be the image. They had to have the responsibility of leading Yisrael in the paths of Yahuwah. So when the king sinned, everybody else like, all right, we can sin now. Because obviously he's not judging them yet, and he's not judging them harsh, so we might as well sin. So that's why I think judgment came upon David and Shlomo harshly, because they started off righteous. They started off with high honor. And when they stumbled and took a step back, the punishment was severe to get them back on track, and also to be a token to those around them that even the Most High Yahuwah can raise up adversaries or opposition to judge his kings and to judge his people. That was one of the first things I did when I woke up. I didn't ask the Most High Yahuwah, hey, make me rich and get me out of this situation. I didn't ask the Most High, hey, can you give me a woman? When I first woke up, I fell to my, I was already going through it with a woman. And it wasn't even none of the women I was really dating. It was just, I was just searching in the wrong places for a woman. And she was just running me. It was like these young chicks were just running me ragged. This is when I understood that the women were in this generation were a lot different. That they truly did not care, and they really didn't have a filter. And they honestly did not refrain themselves from even embarrassing themselves and their actions. So I knew I was dealing with a whole different breed that I was not equipped to deal with. So I fell to my knees and I prayed to the Most High Yahuwah. And I was crying with tears down my eyes. I don't want to go to hell. That's all I said. I don't want to go to hell. Please save me. And that's when I started getting hit with visions, because I was idle. I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I talked about this vision before, how I was fighting this demon, and I, for some reason, this dream, this vision, I said, the sword of truth. And it appeared in my hand. It was a beautiful, glittering sword. And I swung it once. These demons disappeared. And I'm rubbing the shoulders of people of all kindreds and all tongues and all races. I'm rubbing their shoulders as if I'm making it shinier by giving them this, like, armor, like touching their armor. So he gave me the understanding and wisdom when I said that I'm a stupid person. I don't know much. Please tell me what I need to know. And from there on, whatever I need to know has been in my path, and I have been dissecting it and discerning it ever since. And in doing so, he's given me rest and peace in order for me to find him or search for him or seek him 10 times after I found him. And then the opportunity for money came. Then the wife came. Then the household came. Then other things that I was able to do by just being obedient. Because I didn't ask for those things were added unto me, which is the same thing his son said. He knows what you need before you even ask it. So I knew that he was going to give me something. He was going to give me some peace and rest as long as I was on this path, this narrow path of searching him and trying to find him as much as I could. And he would not allow me to be distracted while I was doing that. Now, mind you, there were enemies raised up in front of me for me to see who they truly were and how they were going to attack me. He was still watching over me while I was going through this training exercise of people trying to take me out or people trying to derail me. And I think I succeeded that to the point where they really don't bother me anymore. He's like, now you see what I wanted you to see through certain trials. That you don't have to fear death. You don't have to fear your enemies because I'm right here for you. And he usually shows up for me at the very last minute. So I know in desperation, it wasn't my wisdom. It wasn't my smarts. I didn't outthink them. It wasn't that. It was him the entire time. So I became very comfortable and patient and knowing that he was going to step in at the last minute to save me from whatever I was going through. I wish more people proved him in this matter and stopped jumping the gun and trying to fix in the situation or an altercation before you go to him. If you feel something is coming on, go pray to the Most High Yahuwah. He knows the situation you're about to walk into. He wants to see, are you going to rely on him or are you going to rely on your own strength? And I wanted to talk about, and it's going to be two parts of this episode, but I wanted to talk about how the Most High Yahuwah's power can raise up opposition for judgment so we can truly respect his power. I don't think many people touched on like the sheer wisdom and how the Most High deals with his nation. So you can look at your life and say, okay, has the Most High stepped in and raised up an opposition for me to understand what I'm dealing with, but also to judge me from my sin? In 2 Samuel 24, 1 through 2, it says, and again, the anger of Yahuwah was kindled against Yasharel. It wasn't kindled against David. It was kindled against Yasharel. And he moved David against them to say, go number Yasharel and Yehudah. For the king said to Joab, the captain of the host, which was with him, go now through all the tribes of Yasharel from Dan even to Beersheba and number ye the people that I may know the number of the people. I'm going to jump to 1 Chronicles chapter 21, verse 1 and 2. And an adversary stood up against Yasharel and provoked David to number Yasharel. Now, depending on what translation you got, the adversary is Satan. Stood up against Yasharel and provoked David to number Yasharel. Mind you, this came from Yahuwah. It didn't come from Satan himself. It didn't come from David himself. Being provoked and being moved, how did the Most High do this? By using Satan. And David said to Joab and to the rulers of the people, go number Yasharel from Beersheba even to Dan and bring the number of them to me that I may know it. Now, why this was a sin is because the pride that must have been in David's ruach that he might not know was still there. He felt that, okay, I'm going to number this to show you how many people I got with me that we could stomp you. We can mash you out. Relying on the number of the people to win a war and not the Most High Yahuwah has given power over all these other nations for us to rule over when we were being obedient. So it's not by our own power, again, it's by his power. He did the same thing to Gideon. He didn't want Gideon to take a large number of people to go to war with a foreign nation. He wanted to take a few number, which I think it got down to 300. To go up, just so he said, the Most High said, just so the children of Yasharel don't get a big head and think that it's by their power that they defeat their enemies. The Most High wants all the credit, as he should. He was the one that brought down low the Egyptians. He guarded us in the wilderness. Even when other nations, when we were walking by them, tried to destroy us, he guarded us from them. All the giants, the Nephilim, took them down because of his strength. So in 1 Chronicles 21, 11 through 14, it says, "So Gad came to David and said unto him, Thus says Yahuwah, choose you either 3 years famine or 3 months to be destroyed before your foes, while that sword of your enemies overtakes you, or else 3 days the sword of Yahuwah, even the pestilence in the land and the angel of Yahuwah destroying throughout all the coasts of Yasharel. Now therefore advise yourself what word I shall bring again to him that sent me." I mean, that's pretty much an easy decision. The Most High gave him a layup. I mean, 3 years of a famine, that's a lot. That's a lot. 3 months to be destroyed before your foes. And David was already getting ready. I don't know where this was. Well, this must have been before David had Shalom, where he had to fight for the rest of his life because of his sin with Uriahu. This seems like it's before it. So, of course, being a man after Yah's own heart, David said unto Gad, "I am in a great strait, a great difficulty. Let me fall now into the hand of Yahuwah, for very great are his mercies, but let me not fall into the hand of man." So think to yourself how many times when you've been judged, if the Most High would have given you time. Some of us have gotten these options. You can either continue to doing this and you'll fall doing it, or you can give up your own way. Follow me. I can show you what lies beyond your iniquity. I'm curious, has that ever been a situation for you where the Most High given you paths? Oh, I've had guests on this show that have told me they felt when they knew it was the last time they were able to do something. The Most High treats us differently, but he'll treat us all the same. The same thing happened to me when he showed me a vision when I was in two different worlds. I was still in the world of flesh and popping pills, and then I was reading his scripture when I wasn't in the mood to pop pills. And he gave me a vision when I talked about this before, while I was on this pendulum, I was on a swing getting dunked in and out of water. That was a warning. He was telling me, look, I can have you above water or I could put you below it. So the fact that Yah knew that David would rather him fall into the hands of Yahuwah rather than fall in the hands of man, he only let it be 3 days and 70,000 men. So Yahuwah sent pestilence upon Yasharel, and there fell of Yasharel 70,000 men. Again, with this number 7. That's how you know it's tagged with the Most High Yahuwah. If you understand numerology of this world, trust me, when you start reading scripture and you really dive into it, you see so many instances or repetitions of the Most High using the number 7, showing you that is him, that he causes life to be removed by his number. The same thing when he causes it to be saved, it will be saved by his number, not a number less, not a number more. His number. Everything is complete and perfected. It just said it had to be 70,000 men, or you would think one of your relatives was caught in 70,000 men. Some of you are here right now because they were outside of 70,000 men. Think about that. But that's just one of the ways that the Most High Yahuwah could raise up opposition in order to judge his people by using a king, just the humble one king to judge a nation. The next is his son, Shaloma, and his affinity for strange women. 1 Kings chapter 11, 1 through 13. But King Shaloma loved many strange women, together with the daughter of Pharaoh, women of Moab, the Ammonites, the Edomites, the Sidonites, and Hittites, of the nations concerning which Yahuwah said unto the children of Yashareel, ye shall not go into them, neither shall they come in unto you, for surely they will turn away your heart after their Elohim. Shaloma clave unto these in love. Now, I don't know what his reasoning would be to have all these wives, all these concubines, all these princesses, other than that he would trick himself and say, oh, this is political marriages, that I'm causing peace around about me because I'm taking in their women and I'm establishing trade and tributaries unto these nations, that I'm going to be rich beyond measure through these marriages. And he had 700 women, princesses, and 300 concubines, and his women turned away his heart. For it came to pass when Shaloma was old that his women turned away his heart after other Elohim, and his heart was not perfect with Yahuwah Elohayu, as was the heart of David, his father. For Shaloma went after Ashereth, the Elohai of the Sinonites, and after Malcolm, which is the same as Moloch, the abomination of the Ammonites. Now, all these gods, when I looked up, had something to do with blood sacrificing or human child sacrificing. So it's almost the same generational curse, too. Obviously, David saw Bathsheba and was ready to kill for her. So this lust for women definitely exacerbated itself inside Shaloma, where one woman was just enough, 10 women weren't enough, 50 women weren't enough, damn near 700 women wasn't enough. I mean, that's a lot of headaches, to tell you the truth. But obviously, as a king, you can put them all in one room and just walk in and out whenever you felt like it. You ain't getting nagged. But I know some of you brothers were high up on your horse when you first came into this truth and you wanted multiple women or multiple wives. I guarantee you, fam, you wouldn't be ready to handle multiple women in this generation. It ain't even them trying to turn away your heart to follow other gods. It's just the overall headache, and you would have to eat through all that feminist doctrine. You have to eat through all that trauma. You have to eat through all that victimhood. You have to eat through all that and then try to bring them into the truth equally. After them being in so many relationships where they were the men either cheated, did them dirty, or they just didn't have good fathers, or they had absentee fathers. So, fam, it would be impossible. You would literally lose your mind and your job trying to keep two women in line. But a lot of brothers, when they came into the walk, they wanted multiple wives. I've seen brothers preach, I mean, had podcasts about having multiple wives. And yeah, there's some brothers out there that's not even in the truth that's accomplished having multiple wives. Obviously, I would see like a black girl and two black girls and a black man. And I've seen a black woman and a white woman, and they propagate all over TikTok and social media that they are happy with the little, you know, thruple. I mean, if you got them down and with it, but like I said, without rules, you can get it done faster. But with rules, with statutes, with ordinances, with feast days, with offerings, fam, it's really difficult out of this generation. It really is. But that's something that comes from Yehuda as well. If you go back to Yehuda and Tamar, Yehuda came up off that field drunk. And he came off that field drunk looking for a prostitute, not knowing it was his daughter-in-law. So he was shamed. He was embarrassed. And he gave up all he had just for some coochie when he came up off that field drunk. And I guarantee you the men out there of Yehuda have fell through a woman through either drinking, drugs, or just being lustful. It started with Yehuda. It won't finish until Yahusha comes back and Yahuwah cleanses purges of our sin and our iniquity altogether. So it's something that we all battled with as men, especially men of Yashareel. So it says, Shelomah did evil in the sight of Yahuwah and went not fully after Yahuwah, as did David his father. Then did Shelomah build a high place for Chemosh, the abomination of Moab, another child sacrificing idol, in the hill that is before Yerushalayim, and for Molech, the abomination of the children of Ammon. And likewise he did all he, sorry, and likewise did he for all his strange women, which burnt incense and sacrifice unto their Elohim. And Yahuwah was angry with Shelomah, because his heart was turned from Yahuwah Elohai of Yasharel, which had appeared unto him twice, and had commanded him concerning this thing that he should not go after other Elohim. But he did not guard that which Yahuwah commanded. I guarantee you there's some women that y'all had in your day, fellas that I'm talking to, that a woman got you to do something that was out of your character. You may not have gone after other Elohim, but you have done something trying to chase a woman, either change your appearance or fight for them. Or, I don't know. I don't know what you brothers do these days in this generation. Simping is what they call it now. But I guarantee you, I ask you to remember one instance that you've gone out of your character for a woman. I guarantee you that woman pops right up into your head. Wherefore, Yahuwah said unto Shelomah, for as much as this is done of you, and you have not guarded my covenant and my statutes, which I have commanded you, I will surely rend the kingdom from you and will give it to your servant. Notwithstanding in your days, I will not do it for David, your father's sake, but I will rend it out of the hand of your son. And he knew to do this because his son was just as wicked as Shelomah. Howbeit, I will not rend away all the kingdom, but I will give one tribe to your son for David, my servant's sake, and for Jerusalem's sake, which I have chosen. This is another example of how powerful the Most High Yahuwah is, and this is truly his show. That he is faithful to his word. He promised David he will forever have a bloodline on the throne. And the Most High is able to snatch away the 11 tribes, or the 10 and a half tribes, and still be able to honor the words that he told his servant David. So the only reason why there's a Yehuda sitting on that throne is because of the love of David, because of promise of David, and also Abraham. There is no other person out there that could be this faithful, this loyal to his word. Not one. And he would have just cause to throw the entire nation of Yasharel away. Just cause. With all the disobedience that we've propagated throughout centuries, he would have just reason and cause to throw the entire nation of Yasharel away and start over from scratch and pick somebody new. He could have done this. This just shows the power that we truly worship and praise this man the way he wanted us to be, wanted us to worship and praise him. Because he truly did not have to go this route. He could have cut us off in all his infinite wisdom and watched us destroy ourselves. And we would be watered down, mixed in with all these other nations, and we truly wouldn't know who we were. Now, these are the people he raised up. And this, again, we're going to try to apply it to our lives. In 1 Kings 11, 14 through 14 to 17, and then 23 to 25. And Yahuwah stirred up an adversary unto Shelomah, Hadad the Edomite. He was the king's seed in Edom. For it came to pass when David was in Edom, and Joab the captain of the host was gone up to bury the slain, after he had smitten every male in Edom, for 6 months did Joab remain there with all Yasharel until he had cut off every male in Edom, that Hadad fled, he and certain Edomites of his father's servants with him, to go into Mizraim, Hadad being yet a little child. This also reeks of Agag. When the Most High said, I want you to eradicate everyone, man, women, and child, and people thought that was harsh. But the children of Agag, or the children of Amalek, they got into the abomination, the same abomination as the Moabites, the same abomination as the Ammonites, which was sacrificing. So that's when Samuel said, just as you have done making women childless, you also shall be childless. Your mother shall be childless. So they must have been hacking off bodies left and right for the Most High to hate what they've done. And then when Agag fled, a descendant of God fled into Median, which they call Media or Medai, which is Persia, which is that location is in Central Africa. Again, if you go to David Rumsey's map collection and type in the text on map section in the website, type in Median or Medra, it'll pop up in Central Africa. If you go Google it, Media, AI would tell you that it's an Iranian dynasty. That Cyrus the Great was Iranian. No. Cyrus the Great was of a Negro origin. The Persian and Assyrian Empire were close together. The true Assyrian Empire was in North Africa. Persian Empire was in Central Africa. The Babylonians was on the east of them. The reason why I say this is because if you go through Yasher, Medai did not want the European nations. He not where the European nations are. He didn't want his lot of inheritance. He wanted to be in Africa. So he married into Shem's bloodline. And that is how they became the Persians. That's how they became Medai or Media or Medra or Median. So when a descendant of Agag fled into Persia, that child grew up to be Haman. And of course, we know the story in the book of Esther, how Haman tried to eradicate all of the Yehudim. So it kind of shows this same scenario again. So in relating this to our lives, how many people have taken you down or shamed you or mocked you or attacked you that you knew? If you can think, what sins were you doing at the time that caused this judgment to be at your front door? Because the Most High don't send strangers to judge you or to humble you or to do damage to you. It ain't strangers. It's always people you know. Either a friend from the past, an ex-girlfriend, an ex-husband, an ex-boyfriend, a family member attacks you. If you've gone through this scenario, think to yourself, what sins were you doing or you thought wasn't going to be known by the Most High Yahuwah that allowed these situations to happen to you? And I guarantee you the Most High must have been behind that because he's done it to his people. It didn't take much for the Most High to stir up this adversary because they already had run-ins with the Edomites. So when Hadad, being a child, grew up under the house of Pharaoh, he wanted to leave because now he bloodthirsty. Now he want revenge. Now he knows why he was sent into Egypt or why he fled into Egypt. Now he wanted to go home and attack Yasharel. 23-25, and Elohim stirred up him another adversary, which is Rezon, the son of Eliada, which fled from his Adonai, Hadad Ezer, king of Sova. And he gathered men unto him and became captain over a band when David slew Sova. And they went to Damascus and dwelt therein and reigned in Damascus. And he was an adversary to Yashareel all the days of Shalomah, beside the mischief that Hadad did. And he abhorred Yashareel and reigned over Aram. Aram is in the same location as Mount Ararat, which I believe is the Atlas Mountains, North Africa. So Aram and Ashishur are in the same location in Northwest Africa. Again, this is the Most High stirring up opposition because of who David slew. So that revenge was already set in place. The Most High just needed to bring it up and use whoever he could use and ensure that they hated Yasharel just to judge Shalomah or make problems for Shalomah. I'm trying to think now, who did the Most High use against me when I was, I already knew. I already know. When I was out here acting stupid, the Most High made sure that those who would take me down was those I was around most of all with. All my partying, all that clubbing, the people who I got in trouble with were people who were my girlfriends or people who were my situationships. It didn't take much to raise them up. It was just two or three drinks away, two or three pills away. It was bound to happen. It was never from strangers. Never. I've never really gotten in trouble with strangers. I always got in trouble with people I was in situations with, situationships with. That's it. And he allowed them to continue to destroy me until when I came to him, got on my knees, prayed, all those people that I have very close ties with, I'm talking about went through vice after vice with, no longer contact me. No longer, I don't even know if they're even alive anymore. None of them contact me. I don't even see them on the street or passing. They don't follow me. I don't follow them. That's how I know it's truly the Most High's power that allowed me to get to this point in my life. I wish a lot of y'all would think about that. Think about who has taken you down or taken you down a notch, who humbled you, who got you to rock bottom. I guarantee you it's somebody that you've known. Whatever sin that you were into, I guarantee you somebody was close to you, betrayed you, and got you to look at them differently so you could separate yourselves from them so you can get to the path of Yahuwah that you are on right now. So this is the end of the first episode. One of two. Because we truly need to give a lot of honor to the Most High Yahuwah, the way he truly judges his people and judges us, that he loves us and cares for us, that he did not destroy us, but he did reprimand us. And he truly, in our judgment, separated us for his righteousness. This is how we truly know that we are set apart. Because as soon as he set us apart by using those who would be close to us to destroy us, this is how we know that we were truly meant for a purpose. Truly meant for a purpose. I think some of you are still holding on to relationships, or you trauma bonded to certain relationships because you're trying to make good on a situation that was already bad. I get it. I almost had that inkling too. Like, oh, I came into the power of Yahuwah. I know about forgiveness. I know about being shamed. I know about being humbled. Man, I would love to go back and share this truth for people who tried to betray me or tried to do me in, who became a stumbling block to me. Like, I want to show them so badly that I've changed. And the Most High would not allow that to happen. He would not allow me to be perverted in that way. I think we all went, I don't know, maybe you fellas went through it too. That as soon as you came into this truth, you try to double back and prove that you were different from who you were when people attacked you and when you had yourself open to vice, sin, iniquity, and unrighteousness. And there's a reason why he closed those doors off for you. Because that's how people dive back into really toxic relationships. This is when that Jezebel spirit comes into play, or that Ahab spirit comes into play. Because now you feel like you're high on your spirituality. You want to go back and try to save somebody. That is not your calling. That is not your calling. When you are saved from your old ways, leave your old ways and the people that were attached to your old ways alone. What are they going to benefit you? Paul said it the best. What does unrighteousness have to do with righteousness? It shouldn't even be in the same company. I think we misplace our empathy or apathy or our compassion with certain people and not understanding that if the Most High wanted them to be awakened, he would awaken them. It is not your duty. It is not your job. It is not your calling to try to wake up people that you participated toxic things with. Once you let go of those old brothers and sisters, those old relationships, you get new ones. I lived through that example. I thought I was never going to get the same type of friends I've had in the world again. But the Most High has shown me that He can reveal all to me. If I stay on this path, He'll give me exactly what I'm not looking for. I didn't think I was ever going to find friends in this truth. And here I'm finding friends, not even having to hang out with them more than a year, but 3 or 4 months, and them asking to be a part of the wedding. Shout out to my boy Matt Colo and Bree. But that's what the Most High can do. It's about time that we learn to live in His blessings, being obedient with that true love for Him. I think we should be tired right now trying to save old relationships, trying to save old ways to try to benefit us because we're comfortable in our old ways. I'm telling you, the Most High can raise up anybody, and I mean anybody, to be opposition for you, to prove your faith, or to judge you. And as we've read, it'll never come from a stranger. It'll be somebody you've done wrong that either is a boyfriend of that person, akin to that person, a friend to that person. You don't know when that judgment is going to come if you don't turn from your wicked ways or your unrighteousness or your unrighteous ways. You've heard many guests on my show have damn near a near-death experience because they tried to hide their unrighteousness under the eyes of the Most High Yahuwah, and they were hurting somebody who was trying to be righteous for them. If the Most High don't have somebody close to you, He'll go through your body. He'll strike you with illness. And He may not even give you a choice of 3 years of this, 3 months of this, or 3 days of this. He literally hit you, and you don't know if it could be your final day. This is why I said in my earlier podcast, I said some of you just don't know that you're on your last drink at the bar, you're at your last concert, you're at your last nightclub incident, or you're in your last toxic relationship. Y'all don't know when that judgment is going to spring up. So detach yourself from unrighteous situations and unrighteous people so you don't be judged, made a stumbling block or a snare or a reproach to your own soul because you don't want to let go of old ways.